And the rest of us can get it a little bit closer because that makes us warmer and we don't get as cold. Because Don likes to leave the air conditioner on. We're in Isaiah chapter 8, and Lord willing, we're going to try to read through the rest of the chapter. So we'll see how that goes tonight. We're going to do a little pretending, using our imaginations. So I'm going to ask you just to play along with me, okay? Humor me. Pretend like I'm intelligent. Whatever. But let's just pretend. Let's pretend that we're in a situation in which the economy is bad. Just asking you to use your imagination. It's a big stretch, but you can do it. That we're in the midst of some sort of bad economy, and on top of this, we live in a place in which just to the north of us, there was some pretty massive attacks. Let's just pretend. And those attacks were upon us, and with those attacks upon us, we felt like, we felt like they caught us by surprise. We weren't ready for that. And some of people, perhaps we even knew, that were affected by this. And let's pretend, and this may be a huge stretch for you, let's pretend that there are family problems. There's hostility in perhaps and with some of our family members. And those family members are causing us trouble, are causing us pain, causing us heartache. It's almost as if we're feeling some attacks from them. And here we are, really some days wringing our hands, kind of fearful, a little bit anxious. About the future. And let's pretend that way over towards the east of us, there's a source in which we can borrow some money from. We won't call it any particular country, but we'll just pretend that that's what's happening. So here we are in the midst of, pretending a bad economy. Here we are with family troubles and the pressures of those things coming upon us. Attacks from hostile individuals. We don't know who they are. And here we sit. Let's pretend that we really haven't been doing exactly what we should be doing. If we were really honest with ourselves, there are probably some areas of sin in our life that we've allowed to persist. And we've not dealt with those things. There are those areas where we basically said we're going to get around to fixing them, we're going to get around to getting our life right, we're going to get around to doing the right thing, but we just hadn't done that yet. And so here we are, and a little bit fearful, anxious about the future, and wondering exactly what we should do. Let's pretend that we're married, and let's pretend that we have a first child, and that child, it's like we, as a couple, begin to talk, and we say to each other, I'm feeling that we're only going to get out of this with just a little bit. There's too much going on. We're just going to come out of this situation with just a little bit. We're probably going to squeak through, but I think we're going to make it. And then all of a sudden, about a year later, it looks like we're going to have another child. And we have this other child, and we begin to realize that I don't know if we have enough money. I don't know if we're going to make it through this. I mean, you know how things happen. You get extra children, and extra bills come with that. And on top of that, you begin to see that, you know what? You forgot. I forgot. There was actually a loan that was coming due, and I forgot that was going to be due this year. Right? And so now we've got, it's probably about 2-3 months away, but the bill is coming due and my payments are going to skyrocket in just a few months. I see that coming around the corner. Now, I want you to think with me, and I want you to kind of imagine with me, and I want you to kind of ask yourself, strategically, logistically, what are you going to do? Let's just talk about it. Just strategic. I'm just talking about nuts and bolts. What are we going to do?
Get a second job.
We got to get a second job, but that's a good idea. Get a second job. I mean, here I am, and here you are. I mean, we're in this whole bad economy, you know, and we're feeling, you know, smaller as a nation. But we're just like a speck in all of this, and we're going, what can we do? And we're saying to ourselves, well, you know, we got to roll our sleeves up. We got to get a second job. We got to do something about it. Anybody else have another idea? Besides get rid of the kids, we got to keep the kids. Pardon me?
Overtime,
OT. They won't let you work overtime.
Uh-oh. Even if you get a second job, it's not going to pay a lot.
It's not going to pay a lot. That's pretty frustrating. Well, is there another job that you could get that perhaps would be a little bit better, but, you know, hey, you might need to compromise a little bit. You might need to, you know, but it pays better. That might be an idea, too.
Work for yourself.
Work for yourself, yeah. Yeah, hopefully people are going to be buying whatever product you're going to be making or service you're going to be presenting. Take the plunge. Gee, it couldn't be any worse than where I am. And so you begin to, you know, you just begin to, your mind begins to go through all these kind of things that you and I need to do. Well, this is exactly where Judea is. Attacks from the north with Syria and the family troubles with Israel, and they've been attacking them too. And on top of this, it's obviously a bad economy because all you have to do is read in Isaiah chapter 1, and he says, look at your crops. Look, you're not getting anything. What's the deal? You ought to be paying attention to this. Your economy's pretty bad. You ought to be thinking about this. One of the minor prophets reminds us, Haggai reminds us that there is a possibility that there are times that we actually seem to be working harder and getting less. And you have to scratch your head and go, how is that happening? We're working harder and making less money. We're taking less money home with us. Why is that happening? And he actually talks about, you know, you get purses that have holes in them. And sometimes you feel that way, you know. I thought I just put some money in there and it's gone. Where did it go? Usually it's my wife taking it out. But did you see that last $20? No, I didn't see it. But so here we are and frustrated about and fearful, anxious about the things that are going on. We don't know what's going to happen. It doesn't look like good news is around the corner. Obviously, it's not good news that's coming around the corner. Things are looking bleak. That's exactly where they are. Now, I want you to pick up with me in Isaiah chapter 8. And he says this in verse 5, the one thing that he wanted them to do, and we talked about this particular paragraph last week, so we won't go into a lot of detail about this paragraph, but the statement was this, that he desired that they partake of the gentle flowing water of Shiloh, the southern waters there that are given, which are the calm waters that God would desire to give them, but they would not. And he said, instead, what you're going to have is a mighty rush of the enemy, which ultimately is going to be Assyria that's going to come in. His statement is, verse 5, and again the Lord spoke to me further, saying, inasmuch as these people have rejected the gently flowing waters of Shiloh and rejoice in Redzen, the son of Remaliah, he's talking about Israel, and we'll also be talking about Syria. Now, therefore, behold, the Lord is about to bring on them the strong and abundant waters of the Euphrates. That's the king of Assyria, as he says, as he goes on and says, even the king of Assyria and all his glory, and it will rise up over all its channels and go over all its banks. Then it will sweep into Judah, and it will overflow and pass through, and it will reach even to the neck. What is he saying? He's saying that this force that is coming is going to be so powerful, it's going to seemingly take in everything around it, and it is going to come right up to you, and you're just, you know, you're just going to be barely breathing as the waters around you. It's really a graphic picture of the enemy coming right around and surrounding little Judah. He says, it'll reach even to the neck, and spread of its wings will fill the breadth of your land. O Emmanuel. Subtle hint, because of the fact that he had given this great prophecy that God was going to give this sign that a child was going to be born of a virgin and he was going to be Emmanuel, God with us, and God saying, but I'm with you. Yet you won't recognize that I'm here. And because of this, and here again, it's like having a life raft right in front of you, and somebody saying, "There it is," and the water just getting deeper, and you go, "Where?" You know, you're not willing to look at what God is giving you to rescue. And He says, "Oh, Emmanuel, God is with you. And why do we have to go this route?" He goes on and says this in verse 9 and 10. And I just want to let you know, and you probably recognize, that we're starting a different paragraph, and it's going to be pointing to a different group of people. It seems as if 5 through 8, he's actually warning Judah of the troubles that are coming and how it's going to come up to really a stranglehold. But now he's going to be talking about those that are coming, and their intent is, and we read last week in Isaiah chapter 11, the intent of Assyria, and by the way, Assyria is this great wealth in the east, which Judah originally starts going over there and thinking, "Well, I'm going to borrow some money from them." You know, of course, here again, I won't go into the politics of where we are, but they're saying, "I'm going to borrow some money from them." But what ultimately comes is this force comes, and this is the worst force, that a far worse force than Israel and Syria. And Assyria is going to come and literally stranglehold them. And the very ones that they went and tried to borrow money from to give them some sort of hope is going to be the very one that's going to cause them great problem and trepidation. And they're going to have a desire, and their plan is to ultimately demolish a little Judah. That's what they're heading to do. And in Isaiah chapter 11 says that this is exactly what their plan and intent is. But this next paragraph, look what it says in verse 9. "Be broken, O peoples, and be shattered, and give ear, all remote places of the earth. Gird yourselves, yet be shattered. Gird yourselves, yet be shattered." Now, when he's talking about girding themselves, what he's actually saying is get ready for war. Get ready for war. Yet what's going to happen to them? He says it twice. You're going to be broken. You're going to be dismayed. You're going to be shattered. And then he says this in verse 10. "Devise a plan, but it will be thwarted. State a proposal, but it will not stand." Why? Emmanuel. That's the word Emmanuel. For God is with us. Here again, go to Isaiah chapter 11. Or actually, chapter 10. And verse 5, if you pick up in verse 5, where he talks about the woe to Assyria. Isaiah chapter 10, verse 5. "Woe to Assyria, the rod of my anger, the staff of whose hand is my indignation." What does Assyria intend to do? Well, God has sent them to plunder. God has sent them as a rod to discipline Judah. But what do they intend to do? Well, they don't intend just to be a rod. They intend, verse 7, "It does not so intend just to be a rod," is actually the context, "nor does it plan so in its heart, but rather," what does it plan to do? Destroy. "To cut off many nations." If you back up now into Isaiah chapter 8, what does he say in verse 10? "Devise a plan, but it will be thwarted. State a proposal, but it will not stand. For God is with us." God has given us a reminder that he is working on behalf of Judah, in spite of themselves, because they're not trusting God. King Ahaz is about as rebellious as you could be. And, you know, if there was ever a time that God had every right, and we know that he always does, but if there was ever a time that he had every right to just demolish Judah, it would have been this moment, as Ahaz literally spit in his face when God offered great and glorious and wonderful blessings to him in spite of all of his sin, in spite of him sacrificing his kids on the altars, in spite of the fact that he had been an extremely idolatrous king and brought all the degradation into little Judah. In spite of all this, God was reaching out his hands and he rejected him. Nevertheless, God says, "I'm going to still be with you." And in spite of the fact that you have this nation that has this insatiable desire, this very nation that little Judah went and borrowed money from, made a deal with, this very nation now coming up to their neck, wanting to just eradicate them, God says, "I'm going to keep them back." I mean, you know, think about it. If you were God you had reached out to somebody. Let's take you out of the God scene. If you're just a person, you've reached out to somebody, you've loved somebody, you've shown them kindness, and they could do nothing but spit in your face and show hatred to you. Now, you might say to yourself, well, okay, I don't have to be mean to them, but I don't have to be nice to them either. And then you could say to yourself, oh, they have some problems coming in. That's too bad. I feel bad about that. Oh, they're going to be wiped off the face of the earth. I really feel bad about that. See, I mean, you could just kind of, but God says, I'm not going to let them go any further. I mean, what we're seeing really is the kindness of God that will not leave them in spite of. And that's why he keeps using that name, Emmanuel, God with us. God is with us. He's wanting them to remember that the only reason they're existing at this moment is because God promised to be with them. He goes on, he says this in verse 11, "For thus the Lord spoke to me with mighty power and instructed me not to walk in the way of this people." Now, who is he referring to at this juncture? We seem to be switching again, but who is he talking to? The way of this people. By the way, he's talking to an individual. Who is he talking to?
Isaiah.
And he's the one with the two kids, right? And, you know, here's a guy, he's been called to be a mouthpiece of God, and at the worst possible time, he's having kids. This is a really bad time to have kids. I've had people come up to me and they go, you know, we're wanting to have kids, but we're wondering if it's a really good time to do it. And I'm saying, well, the Lord is with you, yes. Because you don't have to worry, do you? It doesn't matter all the things that are going on. In fact, the promise throughout Isaiah is, I'm going to protect the kids. The very ones you're sacrificing on the altars are going to be the very ones that are going to get out of this, and I'm going to keep. I got my hands on the kids. And here again, this is why the messianic prophecy keeps referring to the Messiah as a child. You can go to a lot of other prophetic Old Testament passages. Very rare for you to see the Messiah referred to as a child. But Isaiah, it'll nail it. It'll say it over and over again. What we begin to see is God's hand upon the weak, and more specifically, the despised and the rejected. And the children were at this time, the despised and rejected. Here, going to go back to chapter 1. What is the great indictment against them? That they have neglected to show kindness to the orphan and to the widow, the despised and neglected. So, and then ultimately we'll read in Isaiah chapter 53, who is the Messiah? The one despised and rejected by men. One that we did not esteem. See? So we come and here we are, and God has given all these marvelous promises that I'm with you in spite of you doing this. And then he turns to Isaiah and he says, look, Isaiah, don't listen to what everybody's saying. Don't listen to these people. Now we've got to ask ourselves, what are they saying? And he begins to tell us in verse 12. You are not to say it is a conspiracy in regard to all that this people call conspiracy. Treason, unlawful venture, unlawful alliance. And we're going to talk about that and what he actually means by this. By the way, you might want to write off as a reference to this 2 Kings chapter 17. 2 Kings chapter 17. We'll talk about that in just a minute. You are not to say it is a conspiracy in regard to all this people call a conspiracy, and you are not to fear what they fear or to be in dread of it. It is the Lord of hosts whom you should regard as holy. He shall be your fear, and he shall be your dread. Then he shall become a sanctuary. But to both the houses of Israel, the two houses of Israel would be who? Israel and Judah, right. A stone to strike and a rock to stumble over, a snare and a trap for the inhabitants of Jerusalem, which is really in reference to Judah at this point. And many will stumble over them, and they will fall and be broken. They will even be snared and caught. Bind up the testimony, seal the law among my disciples, which seems to convey that not many people are going to see this. And we've talked about this before, but not many people, even though this is unfolding and God is giving all the signs, most people are not going to see. The disciples were going to have insight. Those that are following, This is going to be a testimony that's bound up. And I will wait for the Lord who is hiding his face from the house of Jacob. I will even look eagerly for him. Behold, he says in verse 18, and we've talked about this too, I and the children whom the Lord has given me are for signs. The two children that were given, one was saying that a remnant shall be preserved. The other was saying that whatever is going to be happening is going to come quickly and just going to literally suck out all of the great profit and everything. And here again, that's the bills coming, by the way. He says, so these are for signs and wonders in Israel from the Lord of hosts who dwells in Mount Zion. Verse 19, and when you say, consult the mediums and the spiritists who whisper and mutter, should not a people consult their God? Should they consult the dead on behalf of the living? And it's an amazing thing. People go to any lengths to avoid talking to God. You know, who are you going to ask about this? Well, I thought we'd have a seance. Maybe if we have a seance, someone will tell us something. Really, listen, if they were so smart, why are they dead? They're so smart. Should they consult the dead on behalf of the living? To the lawful, to the law, and to the testimony. If they do not speak according to this word, it's because they have no dawn. He's basically saying, why don't you go to what I have to say? Why don't you listen to what I'm telling you to do? If you'll just do that, won't everything be okay? And they will pass through the land hard-pressed and famished, and it will turn out that when they are hungry, they will be enraged and curse their king and their God as they face upward. Then they will look to the earth and behold a distress and darkness and gloom of anguish, and they will be driven away into darkness. By the way, chapter 9 is one of the great chapters of promise that comes right after this. And you can take a moment and read this particular chapter in great hope. A child will be born, a son will be given, and the government will rest on his shoulder. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. You're going to see a great light up from the north. And, that's a nice picture, seeing a great light coming from the north rather than the enemy coming from the north with all of his enemies. And here again, the great hope and the great promise that God desires for us. Now, one of the great themes of the book of Isaiah is this, and you're probably familiar with the passage. It's found in Isaiah chapter 55 and verses 8 and 9. You'll remember it if I started quoting it. My thoughts are not right. So, yeah, it's a very familiar passage, and we oftentimes embrace this particular passage. It's a good reminder that we don't think the same way as, and basically God is saying, we don't think the same way God thinks. When we run into trouble, when we have these kind of issues, we start planning, we start strategizing, we start going through the logistic, you know, plans that we need to make. I mean, we're basically all utilitarianists, really. I mean, we think in regards to what does it work? I mean, if it's working today, then it's probably going to work tomorrow, and it's probably going to keep us tomorrow. So, you know, why are you working where you work? Most of us are utilitarians. Most of us are working the job that we're working because, you know, if we were to ask you, why are you working where you're working? Well, I don't know. That's the first one that came open. Why are you working there? Well, it pays more money. I mean, we can kind of go down the list, and I'm trying not to be too sarcastic, but the point of the matter is that we're probably not there because we felt the divine hand of God moving us to this point. But it was just utility. It was just, you know, hey, it's the way it is. The point of the matter is that our ways are not God's ways. And we find ourselves fearful and anxious because we find things getting out of hand. I mean, it's one thing to try to make enough money to pay grocery bills. It's another thing to make enough money to support a family. It's another thing to make enough money to support family that's sick. And then you have a catastrophic illness, and we start pulling out our hair. But on top of that, then your economy starts going awry, and then you say, well, now I can't control that. And what you said, it should have said at the very beginning was, I can't control any of this. Because the bottom line is, I don't care what this world is offering you or what you think you can do, what your prowess is. The bottom line is you're only a breath away from failing. That, you know, this is why he says in Isaiah chapter 2, stop regarding man whose what? Breath is in his nostrils. Yeah, stop. Stop trusting in him, which, by the way, would include you. See, that's you and me. So here we are, and we're wrestling with these things, and yeah, our mind is wrestling in a thousand different directions. And what is it we really need to do? Well, we're reminded in Isaiah 55 that our ways are not his ways. And let me just kind of give you a few examples of that. I was sitting down this past week, and I go, wow, God's ways really aren't our ways. Let me kind of give you some examples. You know, God chooses in the book of Genesis, and the pretty strange ways in which God desires and designs and plans to save, if you think about it. I mean, here God turns to this guy named Noah, and he says to him, we're going to have to save mankind. And he says, what I want you to do is I want you to build this thing called a boat. And what it's going to be for is a phenomenon that's never happened before. So I just want to let you know ahead of time that everybody else on the face of the earth, now there's like 1, 2, 3, there's like 8 of you, everybody else on the face of the earth is going to be really laughing, because they're going to go, what? This is going to what? And you're going to what? With that? What is that anyway? See? I mean, think about that. That's a pretty ridiculous thing. It's pretty ridiculous that God would turn to an old man and an old woman, 75, 80 years old, and say, you know what I'm going to do with you guys? I'm going to make you the greatest family on earth, and you're going to bless all the families of the earth. And I can just see Sarah going, yeah, right. And then here God waits until, what, they're about 100 years old before something. I mean, that's, talk about ridiculous. That's just plain ridiculous. 1 Corinthians tells us in chapter 1 that God chooses the weak and the foolish things to confound the wise. Why is he using children in the book of Isaiah to bring the signs? See, because they're despised and rejected. That's exactly why he's doing it. You go a little bit further, and you got this guy that's, I call him a mama's boy. And God calls out this mama's boy, and he says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make you the greatest nation on the planet. You remember who he was. It was Jacob. Yeah, Jacob, the great mama's boy. And he runs a little scared, and he's a little bit of a manipulator, but he really isn't a fighter. In fact, he would rather dodge his brother. In fact, he'd rather put the women and children out front than have to contend with fighting against his brother. Right? I mean, he'd rather do the deception thing than face head on what he needs to be doing. But yet God's going to make him the great. That doesn't make any sense. Or how about this one? You got this guy that has been hated and rejected by his own family, i.e. his brothers. He now is going to be enslaved, and that's God's plan to rescue his family. Work that one out for me. All right, so you want to rescue the family because there's going to be a famine, and you want to bless them greatly. So what are you going to do? Okay, you get sold off into slavery. All right, you're off to a good start. And then when you get sold off, you work for this guy, and then his wife accuses you of what? But you didn't do what? So why are you now in jail? That's not going to work. We're not going to help anybody here. I mean, everything that's unfolding in that plan says this is a really bad plan. Isn't that true? How about this one? You got this guy that's a fugitive, and he's running for his life. And the first job he can find is shepherding. And hey, that's a good guy to rescue a million or so people from a powerful nation. Yeah, that's what we'll do. We'll get this guy, and I know what we'll use to beat up those bad Egyptians. We'll use a staff. Why didn't I think of that? And the staff will be used to rescue all those people. Does that make any sense to you? Does it seem a little stupid? I mean, if we just spend a little time to think about it, it's obvious that it's... Or, you know, I love the fact that Jesus brings this up in the Gospel of John to Nicodemus, and he goes, Nicodemus, you know that story about the standard of the snake that's lifted up from the earth? You remember that story, don't you? There's a standard of the snake that's lifted up. And you remember why it was... He says, make this bronze standard of a snake. And he says, lift that up, and when everybody looks at it, they'll be healed. And what would they be healed from? Snake bites. Yeah, think about that. Why would I want to look at something that's been causing my pain? Everything about me trusting in that thing and doing exactly what I'm told at that point. I mean, if I get a snake bite, you know, I don't know, get out the kit. Tie something around. Do something, but don't stare at this thing. That's about the most ridiculous, and of all things to stare at, a snake. That wouldn't make any sense. Or how about this one? I love this one in Joshua chapter 6. The best way to bring down a wall is what? Just walk around. And, you know, maybe a few trumpets, maybe some shouting. We'll just kind of have a party out there, and that's how we're going to defeat these people. That doesn't make any sense. Or how about if we really want a war hero, let's get a guy that's a farmer. And let's let him be a little scared. And let's walk up to him and say, mighty warrior, and let's let him rescue us all. And give him a really big army, but then tell him to lose them. And tell him to come out with just a few. So that maybe with 300 people, he's going to defeat 120,000 people with swords, and he's going to do it how? With pots and trumpets and
torches.
That doesn't make any sense. I know. If you really want to get a strong guy, make him strong by having long hair. That makes a lot of sense. Just grow your hair real long, and you'll have a lot of strength. Are you feeling the wisdom in any of this? How about you? If you want to find a brave person, let it be a woman. We'll call her Deborah, and she'll put some backbone in the guys. Or how about the fact that somehow God's going to bring the Messiah through a Moabite? Wait a minute, those are the despised people. And that through this Moabite woman, there's going to be a king? And by the way, the guy that's going to be chosen to be the king is going to be some shepherd boy that everybody says, well, first of all, the sons of Jesse, you don't even want to mess with those guys. And then you finally get through the, and there's some guy way out there in the field where that's where he belongs, quite frankly, and that's going to be the king? That doesn't make any sense. How about the fact that you're going to have a child born of a woman whose husband had been murdered, and now she's marrying the man that murdered her husband, and through that marriage will come the Messiah? Does that make any sense to you? That would be David, wouldn't it? Bathsheba. That's right. You get a little Jew girl, and you walk up to her, and you say, you're really pretty. You're going to rescue our nation. Through a beauty contest. You didn't know those beauty contests were that important. But you're going to actually rescue a nation through a beauty contest. And that would be Esther. The greatest place of birth is going to be in a little town of Bethlehem. God is going to build the greatest kingdom from fishermen. God's ways are not your ways. We come to Revelation and we have this massive scene of this huge, massive, what? Dragon. And you say, who is going to beat up the dragon? Who's going to beat up the dragon?
A lamb
as if slain. There's nothing here that makes any sense. Everything goes against my grain. Everything that God is telling me to do is going to cause me to stumble if I'm walking in arrogance. If I think that it's my logistics, if I think that it's my strategizing, if I think that it's my wisdom that's going to get me through this, everything that God tells me to do will become offensive and a stumbling block. And that's exactly what he's saying here. It's going to become offensive and a stumbling block to me. So what does God really want me to do? Well, okay, here we are. Let's go back to the whole thing again. Here we are in the midst of this mess. And we find ourselves and we find our nation borrowing huge amounts of money from this great force in the east, bringing great debt to us. We don't know if they're going to be our friend tomorrow or not. They could be the very enemy that comes against us. And here we are just, I mean, you can't even see us. We're just a little dot. We're going, well, what can I do about this? And, you know, I guess in our nation we would say, well, you need to vote. I would say, go ahead and vote. That's a good thing. You ought to. You ought to be good citizens and vote. You ought to take stand. But you know what? This isn't God's plan. God's plan is that you and I get on our knees and get our heart right. Now, I know it's going to be a little offensive to you, but this is what's going to rescue you. You know, do you know any sins in your life? Then get them right. Stop doing them. Stop perpetuating them. Stop continuing them. You know there's something that you're doing that's wrong that you continue to do, and you say, I'm going to get around to it. I'm going to fix it someday. Then stop doing it today. Because God is telling Isaiah, look, you're not to fear what they fear, and you're not to say, well, this is just a conspiracy. Because, and let me bring in the passage now in 2 Kings. Look, turn to 2 Kings in chapter 17. 2 Kings chapter 17 puts us in the context of where we are, that is with the king of Ahaz. And it's at the time of King Ahaz. And I just want you just look at these few verses. I'm just going to kind of talk you through them. But in the first few verses of 2 Kings chapter 17, you have, it's in the days of King Ahaz, which is exactly where we are. And you have this guy that just become king in Israel. That's the family members, right? And in Israel, the king has become Hoshea, right? You see his name there? Okay. That particular king is, well, he's just as wicked as Ahaz, if not more. And so God sends, remember this people that we decided to borrow from? Well, God sends them, and they start attacking. I guess you could say they started conning their notes. And they started attacking, so the king of Israel goes, wait. Can we make a deal here? And the king of Assyria says, sure. Give me monthly payments with compounded interest. And so King Hoshea, being the upstanding citizen that he is, signs the dotted line but goes, yeah, right, I'm going to pay you. And goes down to Egypt and makes another deal. I guess he goes and gets a credit card to pay the whatever. But he goes down and he makes another deal. And here he is. And finally, the king of Assyria goes, wait a minute. You've reneged. You're supposed to be paying me. Oh, yeah, well, I just forgot. He goes, yeah, right. And then what does he do? Yeah, it's time for Repo Man. And Repo Man comes in and he starts taking everything out and getting what is his, and he just basically wipes this guy off the planet. Now, we're looking at this from a human perspective, and if you walk with me in this in a human perspective, here's my conclusion. Hoshea deserved what was coming to him. Why? Because he didn't pay his bills. He promised the king of Assyria that he was going to pay. He didn't pay. He deserves everything that's coming to him. And quite frankly, the problem is this whole conspiracy. He reneged. He formed a bad alliance. And probably many of us strategizers would say, you know what? He should have never signed on the dotted line to begin with. Isn't that what most of us would say? If he had never signed on the dotted line, then he wouldn't have been in this trouble. Isn't that what you would say? But you haven't read far enough in 2 Kings chapter 17. Because our tendency is to think logistically. Our tendency is to say, you know what? You find yourself in trouble, right? I mean, how many times have we found ourselves in trouble? And quite frankly, you shouldn't have signed. But we attribute all of our troubles to that one act. And the problem was, we had walked away from God. That was the problem. Read a little bit further in 17. Because the whole problem that Assyria is now collecting is not because they reneged on the deal. The problem is, God is saying, the problem is because you left me. You're in this problem because you're in this state because you stopped doing what I told you to do. You started worshiping idols. You started sacrificing your kids. You started doing all these things. And instead of getting your heart right, you try to make deals with everybody else. But it's not because you made a bad deal. It's because you left me. See, but it's hard for us to think in these terms, and the tendency is going to be, and this is exactly what Isaiah is saying. He's saying, don't be like the rest of them that go around saying, well, it was just a bad deal. Shouldn't have ever made that deal. That's the reason they're in trouble. They just should have never. So they're looking up at Israel and they're going, I mean, you're looking at family members and you're going, I know why they're in trouble. They should have never taken out that loan, or they should have never taken that job, or they should have never. I mean, and we're thinking logistically. You know what the real problem is? They need to get their heart right with the Lord. And what he's saying is, what you should be doing is fearing me. What you should be doing is getting your life right. And what he's going to go on and say is, all these signs that I'm bringing, the rest of the world is going to say, well, you know, they shouldn't have done this. It shouldn't have happened here. Shouldn't have done this. And how many times have you tried to figure out all the problems in your life? How many times have you tried to figure them out this way? Well, gee, I wish I wouldn't have done that. And you probably shouldn't have. But let me give you an example of this. And I'm not telling you go out and make bad decisions. Please, don't go around saying, Pastor Gary said I can make bad decisions and God will rescue me. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is when your heart is right, you're going to be making good decisions. But the problem that you're in, the trouble that you're in, is not because you weren't strategic enough. It's like the stock market. You know, I should have bought low and sold high. I'll do it different next time. You know, it's not because of that, because you and I can't figure when the low is and when the high is. We can't figure out when that's going to happen. What is the low? I don't know. Maybe today's the low. Oh, no, it can get lower. But you don't know that. You and I can't psych out this economy. We can't psych out our lives. We can't try to figure out all the contingencies that are out there. But you can do this. You can get right with God. And he's saying you're not to say to yourselves, well, gee, this is just a strategic mess. And you're not to be afraid of the things that everybody else is afraid of. Well, what are you afraid of? Well, I'm afraid I'm going to lose my house. I'm afraid the bank might do this, or I'm afraid that I might get sick. Oh, what about health care? What am I going to do about this? And you begin to worry. God says you're not to be afraid of this thing. Being afraid of those things is a sin. And if I did the right thing, oh my goodness, if I did the right thing, where would I be? He says, don't be afraid of that. Instead, trust me. Do the right thing today. And believe, I'm going to take care of the problems. Go back to Isaiah chapter 1, by the way. And by the way, he says in verse 21, verse 20 of Isaiah 8, where does he want us to go to? To the law and to the testimony. In other words, I've been telling you what to do. Do what I tell you to do. Yes.
Where's that at?
Chapter 8, verse 20. Uh-huh. Now back up in Isaiah chapter 1. And I just want to remind you once again, it's not enough if you were to start in verse 10, and we're not going to start there, but if you were to start in verse 10 and talk about the fact that you're going to church and you're doing all of it, you're singing the hymns and you're putting your money in there, it's not about the regiment. It's about the heart. It's always been about the heart. Old, New Testament, still the same. Man looks at the outward appearance, God looks at the heart. It's always been about the heart. So the question is, are you doing what's right? My life's a mess. How am I going to fix it? You're thinking all these things, and God says, stop trying to figure out the world economy. Stop trying to figure out. You're this dot. You can't control anything. And he goes on and reminds us in Isaiah, right? The nations are like a drop in the bucket. So in case you're thinking that, gee, if I was a nation, I would be more influential. The nations are as dust on the scale. They are regarded as nothing. Yea, they are as less than nothing. So, you know, influence there is just a moot point. There is no influence. I have no power. Man has no influence. It is the divine hand of God that reaches out and protects that little baby that can't take care of nothing. And if you and I, in quietness and confidence, would allow him to be our strength, we could be rescued too. He tells us in Isaiah chapter 1, I don't even want you coming to church and spreading out your hands. I don't want you crying out unto me. It's just a bunch of malarkey. You're not being sincere. And we pick up in verse 16, what does he want us to do? Wash yourselves, make yourself clean. You know you're doing some stuff that's bad. Stop doing it. Remove the filth away from you, the evil of your deeds from my sight. It goes on and says, cease to do evil. Stop it. Would be another way of putting it, right? And evil is what? Everything that's hurtful, calamitous, wrong that was going to bring harm to people. Think of the harm that is coming about because of your compromise. You say, well, I'm not hurting anybody. Yes, you are. You're not only hurting yourself, but you're hurting others. You say, well, how am I hurting others? Because you're not helping others. And I don't know if you remember us reading this on Sunday, but the sin of omission, that is omitting things that you should be doing, is regarded as one of the most heinous crimes to God and one of the main reasons why many will be thrust into eternal punishment because they did not help the least of these. Remember that? I read that Sunday. Not helping. You say, well, I'm just minding my own business, just accumulating for myself. That's the point. That's not the nature of God, and you're not following the plan of God. He goes on and says this in verse 16, now cease to do evil, verse 17. Learn to do good. Learn to do good. Seek justice. Reprove the ruthless. Defend the orphan. Plead for the widow. What is he saying? Start doing good stuff. Then you and I will sit down and talk. But don't go hurting, you know, it's like you're kicking the little kid around on the street and you're going, God, what are you going to give me now? And God, stop kicking the kid. You know, we live our life in the sin and debauchery of our lives, and we're trying to get some sort of gratification from those things, thinking that by them or by putting God on the back burner or by making him last on our priority list, that somehow... And you say, well, I haven't done that. I put God first. And then I would have to ask you, yeah, but with your heart? I mean, I wish I had a nickel for every time I came before the Lord. And I say, okay, God, I guess I'll do this for you. And, you know, I wish I'd never done it that way. because he's looking at my heart and he's saying, but yeah, do you want to do it? Do you trust me? And quite frankly, I really didn't. Defend the orphan, plead for the widow, come now. Let's talk. Let's reason together. Though your sins are as scarlet, they shall be white as snow, that they are red like crimson, they shall be like wool. You saw some bright snow, and I think one of the prettiest colors. Actually, my mother had seen a bunch of cardinals after a snow had come on one of her trees, and she said there were 5 cardinals, bright red cardinals, in that snow-covered tree. Imagine the way God decorates trees. Are pretty cool. But that red against the white, this is a magnificent contrast. If you consent and obey, you will eat the best of the land. You know, that just doesn't make sense. Think about it. Think about it. Does that make sense? I don't know if I can meet this week's budget. Well, I know what you need to do. You need to go home and pray. That's so stupid. Go home and pray, please, Pastor Gary. Let's talk reality. I mean, there's no money in my pocket. You know, we're having this problem. I mean, I can see the storm clouds coming. I've got to plan for something. Okay, stop doing wrong. Our ways are not his ways, are they? And he says, you're not to be as these people, because the tendency of people is to blame something. And we see the phenomenon going around us and we go, oh, I know why that's happening. Everybody has a reason. Oh, it's because them old liberals are doing this. It's because this person's in office. It's because of this. And we can think of 1,001 reasons why it's, in fact, we have talking heads that come up with all the legitimate reasons why these things are happening. Quite frankly, logistically, they're correct, most part. However, it's not the real reason. For if God's people, who are called by his name, will humble themselves and pray, he'll hear, and what will he do? Heal the land. That's pretty logistic, I think. It's pretty tangible. And I love those tangible passages, because it lets me know that God is the one that supplies all of my needs according to his riches and glory. And all these things will be added unto me if I seek first his kingdom. It's hard to imagine that we actually save time by setting aside time to talk with God. But we do. It's hard to imagine that God gives to his beloved even in their sleep. But he does. And now the question is, are you going to believe this ridiculous message or not? Isn't that what it's about? Well, Father, we come before you tonight and we give you thanks that you're the God of the impossible, that nothing is too hard for you. That in spite of ourselves and in spite of our sin, you still reach out to a rebellious nation all day long. Oh. And you cry out to us and you ask that we would embrace you. You have not given up on us, and you said, I will be with you. God with us. Now, Lord, you have given us a choice tonight. And in your word, you've given us a clear mandate not to listen to the world and not to try to figure out what is the greatest strategy, but to just get our lives right with you. And though we be a speck in the mass of this humanity, you will work on our behalf, because you're a God that does the impossible and that works through the weak and the foolish. And of all the things, Lord, that I could ever be, that I can be real good at. I give you thanks in your name. Amen.